Tommy Chung of Cheech and Chung fame announces that he has cancer.
I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Going to start treating it with cannabis oil. I looked at a video just recently called Run from the Cure by Rick Simpson, and it documents how he cured his melanoma cancer with by using hemp oil.
If you know the roots of it, then you will find the truth in it.
My name is Rick Simpson. I'm here to tell you about the most medicinal plant known to man, hemp.
In late 1998, I watched an episode of The Nature of Things entitled Reefer Madness 2. Dr. David Suzuki interviewed many people with serious medical conditions who had been using hemp as a treatment. The results were amazing. After seeing this program, I purchased some hemp and tried it. Just smoking hemp did more for my medical condition than all those pills the doctors were giving me, and I told them so.
People are dying for no damn reason. I'd like to see the most medicinal plant in the world get the recognition it deserves.
In a small Nova Scotia town, one man is trying to get the word out about what he says are the healing properties of hemp oil.
Oil extracted from marijuana plants. Rick Simpson has been making it and giving it to friends and neighbors.
I asked many doctors for a prescription for hemp, but was refused. All the doctors would do is tell me that hemp was bad for the lungs and to stay away from hemp. It's still under study.
Cannabis and hemp traditionally have been used to treat alcoholics and recovering drug addicts, and it hasn't changed over the years. They're still using it today in some cases, but most medical facilities don't recognize it. Mainstream medicine refuses to recognize the validity of it. The International Cannabinoid Research Society has been researching it for 17 years. We haven't been able to find anything that appears detrimental. Everything is beneficial.
Slowly, my thinking process is cleared from the effects of all those chemical drugs the doctors had given me. And everyone around me saw the improvement in my condition. The oil had worked wonders for me.
It is illegal to provide people with hemp oil containing THC, whether or not the supplier is paid.
To anyone that would say that I am nothing but a high-class drug dealer, to that I would just have to laugh. I mean, drug dealers, they sell it for a big price and they make the money. I've been giving it away since 2003.
The hemp oil Rick Simpson is making contains THC, an illegal substance. He says there's medical proof that THC kills cancer cells. Rick Dwyer says Simpson's hemp oil cured his father's cancer and other diseases. In McCann, Nova Scotia, this oil is gaining a reputation as a miracle drug.
Hemp oil containing THC has been touted as an effective treatment for many diseases, including cancer.
Hi, good evening. Rick Simpson Show on Dark City Radio. We have quite a posse of people gathered tonight. Rick's at his dentist, having his cap sorted out. We weren't quite sure what to call the show this evening, like something like oil's no good for dental care, or, you know, the Rick Simpson Show, or just the Simpson Show. But we kind of saw it as an opportunity to show Rick that it's not about just about Rick, of course, not taking away from anything from what Rick's done. He is a spearhead in this campaign without any doubt. Nobody... That's not for debate. It's no longer for debate. The head of the cannabis movement on earth is Rick Simpson. He was asked to take that position at the funeral of Jack Ira. Undisputed. It's never been disputed. So a case about getting people to come together. And, well, Rick wasn't here. The crew, Sadama and Dawn and Lee. I know the others did, but they were paramount in getting out information and saying, look, come. Come, if you're really into doing this and you really are about it, you know, and you're not just trying to blow your own trumpet, you know, or fly your own flag with your own hidden agenda, or sometimes quite obvious agenda we've found, then join us. And this was the night to do it. So, Lee's kind of co-hosting with me tonight. Say hello, Lee.
How do you, everyone?
There we go, he's there with us. Lee, if you don't know, for the people who are just tuning in for the first time, Lee's been, you could say, heading up things. Although we don't have a head or an hierarchy, he's been pulling the information together to us and delivering it, like the Dark City man on the ground in Spain, looking at the legislation and have we got alternatives, can we use it? Rachel's with us, as usual. Again, if you haven't met us, Rachel's now treating herself. She's on ongoing treatment. Really wants to get this info out, so we'll be hearing from Rachel a little bit later. Of course, we've got a lot of the crew with us. I'm not going to go through them all. There's a lot in the room tonight. But also what I do want to mention is, and I'm going to get it right, I've been calling him Tim all day, but he's not called Tim, he's called Jim. Matt, they're from the Birmingham Brigade. But who I'm going to bring in first, and we're going to move around then, as I said, but what I want to bring in first is a guy who I didn't know a lot about until recently. I really didn't. I chatted with him. I had a brief chat with him a day or so ago. I looked at some of his work. Alan Druffy. I hope I'm getting that Druffy right, Alan. Do you want to tell our listeners and the crew a little bit about yourself, Alan, and what you've been doing regarding cannabis?
Buckley, my name is, with a B, but I've been campaigning now for over 22 years, basically to change the law. And 22 years ago, of course, we knew that there were lots of good uses for cannabis, but we didn't know all the medicinal uses that we know about today. We didn't know about the oil, for instance. So I was campaigning all along to change the law, basically to stop people being arrested unless they're hurting anybody, and to enable people to grow their own plants at home without interference, and to benefit from the plant how they like. So I spent some time in Her Majesty's prison for dealing back in the 90s. When I come out of prison, I got back involved with more serious campaigning. In 1999, I got together with a guy called Jack Gerling in Norwich, and we formed a political party, which we called the Legalized Cannabis Alliance. And it was to serve as a platform for people to stand on and to fight elections to get our message out. And the message was basically no victim, no crime. We should, as users, we should be entitled to the same protection, by law as, for instance, people who choose to drink alcohol. And we spent 6 years fighting elections. We fought in over 85 elections. Parliamentary elections, we were getting usually about 2.5% of the vote, which wasn't bad for a single issue party. And local elections, we were getting sometimes 5-7%, and once even 15% of the vote. And that actually led into a downgrading of cannabis to Class C. I'm not claiming it was a direct result of us campaigning politically, but it did go down to Class C after we contested two general elections. And we lost the impetus and we lost the focus a little bit, and people thought, well, it's almost legal now. And I think we made a mistake at the time, although it was out of necessity. So we stopped being a political party and we stopped fighting elections. And again, whether it's anything to do with that, I don't know. But a year or so later, they put cannabis back up to Class B. So the fight goes on. The problem is getting the government to listen. How do we get the government to listen? What's going to pull their strings? Is it going to be financial? Is it going to be human rights? Is it going to be medicinal uses? And so on. So there's new people involved fighting now in different ways. And I'm now, as an independent person, just saying what I feel, what I think, and trying to stand up for people, really, not so much myself, and not only, people with serious illnesses that use cannabis, but for people who don't have serious illnesses that use cannabis because it's also known as a very powerful preventative medicine, which is just as important. So I'm fighting for everybody. So that's my introduction.
Brilliant. Welcome to the many soldiers in this. I don't know if we should call it a battle or a fight anymore, but I'm right with you. I really am with you on all that, bro. And you know, you're saying it's not a direct, you know, the classification being brought down to Class C. I'm glad you brought it up. Maybe not directly, but definitely indirectly, Alan. You can't take away from that. You know, this is pressure being applied from all quarters at the time. I remember it well. But I do agree with you again on perhaps that was not a mistake, of course, but we can learn from that. It's never a mistake if we learn from it, bro. But maybe that was the time to push a lot harder.
I mean, we did what we could. We were all amateurs. We're not professionals. We weren't politicians. We hadn't done this before. We had to take it step at a time. And personally, I think it did have a major influence. We did get a lot of press attention. We did we testified before the government. We spoke at the Oxford Union. Even in 2005, we had the party broadcast on the TV in Wales, first time ever for a cannabis single issue party. And I'm sure we did have an effect, but I don't want to say, you know, whether we did right or whether we did wrong. We did what we did and we tried our best. And in a sense, we're up against a brick wall of prohibition at the moment. And like you say, you don't know whether to call it a war or a battle. They call it the war on drugs. And I'd just like to say about the war on drugs, because there is no such thing as a war on drugs. There is no such thing as an illegal drug. You know, the law is about people. The war is on people. The law says it's illegal to possess, it's illegal to cultivate, it's illegal to supply for some people with some drugs. And that seems to be a bit messed up to me when you got two of the most dangerous drugs in the country that's responsible for most illness and absenteeism and premature death is alcohol and tobacco. And then you've got a plant like cannabis that people can grow at home, sit at home quietly and relax with, enjoy music, do whatever they want with, plus all these fantastic medicinal benefits that we're discovering. You know, and it's wrong that governments should be waging war on people like that, you know, who are simply growing a few plants, sitting at home, relaxing, or trying to cure their symptoms or their illnesses. It's just simply wrong, you know, and people have to realize it's not a war on an inanimate substances like drugs. It's a war on people. We're the victims.
I'm right with you, man. I mean, they're actually using acts, the Misuse of Drugs Act in most cases. And again, where is the victim? A drug must, now I'll misquote it, but I'll get it roughly right. All prescribed drugs must do what they are prescribed to do, must not have undue side effects, and must be seen to increase the benefits and quality and life of the prescribing, roughly. And cannabis is made illegal under that. And I mean, anybody who's done it, you know, just scratched the surface with researching will tell you that there are no undue side effects. Overdose puts you to sleep, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's the undue side effect. And I mean, most people who've scratched the surface on any kind of alternative medicine will realise that the sleep state is where your body can do its best work. It really can heal you whether you're in that state.
Exactly.
It does increase the quality and benefits of life of anyone that uses it. Of course, it wouldn't be a prescribee unless you try and prescribe yourself, which you'd have to do. And their actual legislation does create victims, and it does create pain.
This is the thing. When you talk about side effects, I mean, if somebody go into a doctor and they get prescribed a tablet or a medicine, and first of all, the doctor doesn't know whether it's going to do them any good. what the doctors usually say is, let's try this. Now, if you look at the possible side effects of some of those substances, lots of millions and millions of people have taken substances and drugs like this. If you look at the possible side effects, it is a nightmare. It is frightening. You know, everything from sterility to impotence to premature death to fainting to, you know, weakness. It's just incredible the range of side effects that some of these medicines have. And then you have cannabis, with millions of people around the world saying that they benefit from it. And I don't argue that maybe for some people it isn't good for them. I wouldn't, if they say it's not good for them, if they say they find it unpleasant, well, I'm not going to argue with that, but I wouldn't arrest them because they have a bad effect. I wouldn't arrest them if they have a good effect. But today, or within the last couple of days, one change has happened, and Sativex, which is basically cannabis, a whole cannabis plant extracted into alcohol, and they just put a bit of peppermint in it and turn it into a spray. It's just cannabis in a spray form. It's no different. It's the same chemicals. But the government has now changed the scheduling of Sativex. So that form of cannabis has gone from being a drug with no recognized medicinal value to a drug with a recognized medicinal value. But the plant itself, of course, is still no recognized medicinal value. So somehow they're taking a plant with no recognized medicinal value, adding alcohol, dissolving out the basic constituents, and turning it into a drug with a medicinal value that costs about 20 times more. It's just crazy.
Just correct me here, if you will, Alan, but isn't that what our beloved Rick Simpson did? Haven't they just copied? Well, I'm sure they don't use a rice cooker, but haven't they just...
What Rick's doing is better, because what Rick's doing is a concentrated oil. What GW Pharmaceuticals is doing is a diluted oil in alcohol. I mean, there's some people like Muslims and Jehovah's Witnesses that won't take alcohol. They can't even take Sativex, even if they could get it. But it's exactly the same thing, except GW Pharmaceuticals are making a massive profit, you know, by selling a diluted substance, and you have to go to the doctor and it has to come in a spray, you know, whereas Rick is basically telling people how to make their own.
Yes, it was a bit of a cod question. So they've actually took Rick's technique, which is good quality gear, right, and they've cut it down, right, and they're knocking it out. And we work this out today. It works out at £540 an ounce. So you can actually buy your cannabis now from your doctor at £540 an ounce.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
We also calculated that once you've paid for the initial equipment to grow your own, 1.2 square meters of standard grow tent. So you can do this between, that depends where you are and what you've got, but you can put a system in, and that system would cost you roughly about £120 to run to get a crop out of it.
Yeah.
And you get probably maybe, it depends how you do it, but we'll just, as a rule of thumb, we'll say we'll get 18 ounces out of that. So basically, you could save yourself £9,000.
Yeah.
The government could save £9,000 on every single person who was being prescribed this, and each person could do that. That would make it £3,000 a month, working over a 12-week growing cycle.
Yeah.
So that's £3,000 a month. People could save the government. Well, not the government, because you never save them. It's never like money, is it? Excuse me. The taxpayer. People could actually save the taxpayer £3,000.
Well, precisely. Yeah, precisely. I mean, like I say, that Sativex is very weak. I mean, GW Pharmaceuticals could just make pure oil like Rick's making. You don't have to, like, force people to grow crops. And there is a little bit of a risk involved in solvents and when you're making the oil. And it's not that everybody can do it. For instance, people with multiple sclerosis or people with serious cancer, they might not be in the state, they might not have 3 months to grow a crop. They might be dying before 3 months. And the government are basically sitting back, allowing GW Pharmaceuticals to sell this expensive product, which isn't as nearly as efficient. And they should have a duty of care to make the oil themselves or enable it to be made so that people can get it and cheaply. You know, it's not just a case of buying £120 worth of equipment. You've got to have the space. You know, you've got to produce a fair amount of it. You've got to have the solvents. You've got to have equipment, ventilation, and so on. And it's not the sort of thing that sick people should be forced to do, especially not illegally. You know, the government needs to look at that. Now we're saying Sativex has a medicinal value. That means that the oil in Sativex has a medicinal value. The only difference is the amount of profit they're making and the technique of how to get it into your system. You know, do you dab it on your tongue or do you spray it with alcohol? If you dab it on your tongue, it's a lot cheaper. It could be a lot cheaper than spraying with alcohol. You don't need sprays and stuff like that. What's wrong with a dab on the tongue? If it's working for people, we see so many stories now, testimonials from people who've been cured of cancer, all sorts of cancer and other ailments. There's people claiming all sorts of things. If it works for them, leave them alone. Protect them. That's what I say.
Yeah, just what I wanted to add something to what Alan was just saying there. You were spot on what you're saying, Alan. But just to add to that, the GW Pharma, how they obviously you say they've recognised and declassified because of Sativex. If you actually look at the amount of patent applications and what they're for, that GW Pharma, just one company that operates out of the UK legally under licence, obviously. It's unbelievable. It rates for epilepsy. The latest thing that they're looking into is a stroke cure. You know, if somebody has a serious heavy stroke, they're saying they should get serious heavy doses of extract into, basically Rick's oil, into people that are suffering strokes, and that will stop the damage for stroke victims. And that's what they're looking into. But we've got epilepsy. We're looking, obviously, in 2011... when the government were pumping out the stories of psychosis, cannabis caused psychosis, at the same time they were taking license fee from GW Pharma, and inside that license agreement they have to tell the government what they're researching and what their aims are on the research. And one of their patent applications at the same time was for an antipsychosis medicine. So it's just chalk and cheese. They just say one thing on one side of the street and then say something else for the public.
Yeah, it's there's two main constituents in cannabis. One is THC, which gets people high, and the other is CBD, which tends to sort of relax people. Well, the effect of like getting high off really strong skunk is a form of psychosis. It's not an unpleasant form of psychosis, but when you get stoned, it changes your mood, it changes your mindset, and technically that's a sort of pleasant form of psychosis. Other people, they'll get an unpleasant form of psychosis. But what GW Pharmaceuticals is also doing is making a substance with a high CBD ratio, which is, as you said, is an antipsychotic, and that can be used to treat psychosis. Now, the interesting thing is that the balance is changed in the plants, has changed over the years. You know, years ago, when I first started smoking in 1971, that was nearly all imported. Homegrown was from the garden. It wasn't very good. Most people didn't bother with it. You know, some people could get nice crop, most of us couldn't. So it'd all be imported, which meant it was grown outside, you know, in the sun over a whole season. You know, what's happened since hydroponics come along in the late 70s is the people who like to get high from the THC have been focusing more and more on making plants with a high THC and growing them quicker in the grow room and the lights hydroponically or in soil, it's quicker. And the ratio of a lot of plants is very different. The THC-CBD ratio is very different to the outdoor stuff. When people say it's stronger, I haven't come across anything I would say was stronger than the Thai sticks of the early 70s and the Colombian grass and the Jamaican grass and the hash from India and the hash Morocco. It was all really strong in those days. And I'm not sure anything's stronger now, but the ratio is different. So you get a lot of skunk. Now, normally an outdoor crop would give you about 0.4% of CBD, irrespective of the THC. So you could get a Thai stick with a high THC, but CBD was still there. When you come down to a lot of the latest like hydroponic crops, they're 0.1%. So, I mean, sorry, the outdoor crop is...
Do you know why that is, actually, Alan? There's a hydroponics grower with over 30 years' experience. Do you know why there is that? It's not... I know where you're going, but it's because the plants, the flowers that are being grown, are mature flowers taken from a stocked mother plant. So you're not growing a first-year flower from seed. Yeah. Which is done externally. So it's exactly the same strain. Now, this is nothing magical, and this is done with chrysanthemums and so forth. It's nothing magical. So that's why you're getting a better... Another point here as well is hydroponics growers that I know haven't done what you said. They have worked, been driven indoors, if you could say, been driven underground by this ridiculous nature of assault on people, because I agree with you, man, it's not a war on drugs, it's a war on people, it really is. There's a lot of misconceptions with it. You're dead right, there is no necessarily stronger cannabis plants around, but the growers have definitely, as in with all agriculture, have progressed. Really have. We're 400 times now more efficient at growing tomatoes than the Victorians were. 400 times, man. So, there's a lot of misconceptions around strains. Of course, the CBD and the CBD argument I've heard many a times. And Rick actually said to me the other day, and I still corrected, that he said, but it's the THC that does the real work.
Medicinally, if you know, the high THC is what you want medicinally, but socially, it's not necessarily what everybody wants. What I'm saying is the absence of the CBD, and not all of, but some of the skunks and the cheese and stuff like that, the low amount of CBD, it isn't balanced for people. And those that are sitting on a knife edge seem to have bad effects.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I mean, to be honest, people do, when it's smoked, I've seen quite a few people over-medicate themselves, literally, and then fight the reaction. I mean, it's going to put them to sleep, and they begin, they won't just stop and nod for a couple of minutes. They won't do it, and they fight that. And that, in more than one case, has been actually prescribed as epilepsy. And it isn't. It really isn't that people... I've seen this happen in Holland, and the reaction that took place in Holland in front of my six-year-old daughter at the time, and the way that people reacted, they calmed the guy down, they put a damp beer towel on around his shoulders, across the back of his neck to cool him down. You know, they gave him water, and they took him outside, sat him in, and he was fine. And my six-year-old daughter at that time, she said to me, "If that was alcohol, Daddy, they would have beaten him up, wouldn't they?" She was six. Yeah. And from that time on, man, I've often tried to look at the way we look at things as we're dealing with the consciousness of a six-year-old. Because if a six-year-old could actually see that, I think that's the kind of people we need to deal with. We are dealing with the consciousnesses of these people that oppose this are just upset little children. They really are. I mean, they've assaulted us for long enough. In more than one way, they took away your liberty, man, for bringing people medicine. I know they said you were a dealer, but hey, as far as I'm concerned, man, you're a warrior towards a cause. And we don't want any more to fall. And we really don't, especially some of the heartbreaking emails I've received and messages of people that haven't took the medicine. They've wanted to and they haven't got it. Well, then people aren't here to speak to us now because they didn't get the opportunity and we will never know because they're now dead. I don't want that to keep happening. I want us to get us a place. If we can work together, you know, I'm not putting myself up there. Don't get me wrong. I'll put the man I was in. I'll put the man I was in like everyone else. But Rick's heading this for us, you know, and we've got to come together. I see it. We have to come together and try and support him. And we want to try and get somewhere sorted out where there is a safe haven for now. And for people who are given that, they haven't got 3 months to grow it. You're right. They haven't. You know, they haven't. This should be available. It should be available now. And not some watered-down chemical industry bullshit they're now selling at £500 a gram. I'm telling you, £500 an ounce plus. I'm telling you, you try and cut that onto the people on the street. That ain't going to happen. They can't afford to do that. That's ridiculous. That's putting the medicine in the hands of the rich elite again. So, well, anyway, we've done half an hour, Alan. We've done half an hour. Just want to introduce to the conversation, because they've been sitting there really patiently, our other guests in the city tonight who haven't joined us. And that's Jim. If you get that wrong. Jim and Mass over in the Birmingham area, I believe. Are you there on the call with us, lads?
Hi, Bob. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How you doing?
Right. We're good here, man. We're good. Do you want to tell us, introduce yourselves, Jim, Matt, and, you know, just a little bit of what you're about for the listeners?
Yeah, well, I'm Jim from the Birmingham Cannabis Club. I think you guys got in touch with us through the club. And, yeah, we're just interested in getting involved more and seeing what we can contribute towards the cause and stuff. The cannabis club movement's obviously about the end goal is to sort of be able to provide people with, you know, reasonably priced, good quality sort of medication. But in this country, we're quite a long way away from being able to achieve that goal. Yeah, some of the other European countries are slightly more, you know, liberal rules have seemed to have, like Spain, have got quite a thriving cannabis club movement. So hopefully we can move towards that sort of, you know, model maybe in this country and see how that goes and see if it helps the people, which is the main objective, really.
Totally agree, man. I totally agree. I mean, you see, we did actually say with the thing with Rick, we're trying to get, you know, Rachel and Leah on the ground there. They've done a lot of work already. We're finding out. It just seems to get better all the time. But at some point, we've got to go, right, we'll have a go, we'll do it here. Or we're not going to do it here. You know? That's the true, harsh reality of it. Can we do it or can't we? If we can't do it, then we should stop complaining. We should go and sit back and forget it, in my head. We've put enough time and energy into this. I'm not a defeatist, you know, because I will sell my house eventually and go and live in northern Spain with that really nice El Presidente they've got down there. Right? It's just said, let's grow cannabis and sort out our economy. Right on, mate. You know? And I really would. I'd support somebody who supports his people. Why not? That's what we're looking for. We did joke about a benevolent dictator. We know why not. It's better than the bullshit we've had for years.
Yeah,
I think if we get it set up there and we can do it, you know, we've got to mirror it. I totally agree with you. We've got to have something. Might not be the same, but yeah, definitely on them lines, Jim.
Yeah, I do think the laws need to change slightly at least to make it, you know, a little bit more, I don't know, maybe not completely legal, but say in Spain you're allowed to possess, you know, so many grams and stuff and sort of decriminalised in a way. I think that would really help the cause at the moment. At the moment, we're quite oppressed, really. You know, people are scared of growing and scared of, you know, getting arrested and getting involved. I think that puts a, you know, bit of a block in front of some people. So I think, you know, a slight liberalisation in our laws would go a long way, even if it was just a small one. Just a step, you know, the first step.
Yeah, I mean, I know Rick's going to go, never. Never, he'll say straight away, you know, it wants to be treated like a tomato or a nettle, because that's what it is, you know. But But Lee wants to get in there. Lee, come on, mate, jump on it.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Just wanted to say, hi, Jim, how you doing, mate? Over here in Spain. I don't know if you've been keeping up with our shows, but you can check them out on the archives on the Dark City Radio with the Rick shows. We've been looking into setting up an association up out here in Spain. And technically, again, as what you said about carrying a bit of weed, it's still illegal in Spain. You'll still get a fine for that.
Okay.
But what we found out is you can start a private association, which is like a society within the society. And the society's got to have rules and statutes and a president, a treasurer and things like that. But then we're not allowed to make a profit. So the stages we're in now is basically looking for a property and a couple of soldiers on the ground that are willing to do take the roles of those places. So we can set this association up and it doesn't cost a lot. We're talking less, we can get it set up for less than €100. It's just we've got to find a property that we can rent to use as the address where the association is set up. So we're really shooting off on this. But what I wanted to ask you, Jim, is obviously you're setting up obviously there's history of cannabis clubs being opened in the UK, lasting a couple of days and closing. I don't know what sort of position are you at with your cannabis club? Is it just like an online thing, or do you actually got a property where you have meetings and things like that? So I'm sure, obviously, you've got a chance to plug yourself.
Yeah, we're still in the early stages. I mean, we've got a Facebook page. We've got 705 sort of members of our page that are following us. And it's just a case at the moment of all the admins sort of, you know, getting to know each other, forming bonds with each other, building up that relationship. And then, yeah, we're going to kick on from there, really. I've only been involved for the past sort of 6 months with the Birmingham Cannabis Club. So, we're just building the foundations at the moment. So it's going to be a bit of a process, but yeah, we're working hard on it. There's a couple of other guys involved as well with the Birmingham Cannabis Club. I don't know if I should mention their names, but yeah, we've got Rion, Richard, Peter, Greg also gets involved. He's like part of the sort of United Kingdom's cannabis social clubs. One of the main sort of figureheads, really, of the movement. He's sort of, yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, it's good to hear, man. That, you know, it's almost like it's starting again. Alan, come on, man, Alan, please jump in here, mate.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there's quite a few cannabis social clubs in Spain now. The idea is they operate transparently, like you said. They have an open accounting. They measure the quantity that they produce and who gets what, and so it's all available to the authorities. And they are functioning at the moment, and they are supplying cannabis to members of the club, the specific club. And there's also a cannabis social club in Belgium, and there's some now opening up in France where they're applying for licenses to the local authorities. But the one thing is, in this country, of course, and also in France, the law is quite severe. And like you say, you know, you can get nicked in Spain for a small amount. You can grow a few plants at home. You're not likely to go to prison in Spain for a small amount of cannabis, and you're not likely to go to prison for like half a dozen plants. When I was talking to one of the founders of a cannabis social club in the Basque part of Spain, where the laws become a lot more liberal recently, and he said people have to realise that if you want to see this in your country, you might have to go to prison. And of course, this is what's putting people off. We've had 10 years ago, we had Colin Davis. He opened up a coffee shop in Stockport and he was supplying medicinal cannabis and he did go to prison. Then we had THC for MS, Mark and Leslie Gibson, who were making chocolate, and they sent out over 35,000 bars of chocolate, I think, with cannabis in. And eventually they got arrested, and they were, fortunately, they didn't go to prison. Then there was Granny Pat, who was advocating putting it in your food. You know, so it had been these really brave people. And I'm 63. I don't want to be one of these. I don't want to risk it. I tell you, 30 years ago, I would have done it. I would have been there because it needs somebody to take control. How they did it in Belgium is you get about 12 people and you publicly plant one little seedling. And then you take photographs of it and you do it all publicly. And if anybody gets arrested, you try to make sure that all 12 people accept equal responsibility. And once that happens, they don't want to take it to court. Then they do it with two plants. And that's how it's been developed. You can find it online. It's called Trek, T-R-E-K-U-U-R, plant. Trek your plant. That's how the Belgians are doing it. It's fantastic to see all these cannabis social clubs opening up in Britain. And I really hope that soon they're going to be able to form their own little cannabis social club within the group and grow for themselves and share it. That'd be fantastic. That's what we need.
Yeah, they're springing up all over the place. And there's work being done every day, really good work by a lot of people.
I think just to add to that as well about all the legal side, you were saying there, Alan, about we need soldiers on the ground. Again, if you look what's really happening, you hear lots of story of people going, getting arrested, going to prison. But every now and again, you hear of charges dropped. And a lot, obviously, what's going to happen in any drugs case, if somebody does the paperwork correctly and presents a legal argument on paper before it arrives to court, a case that could set a precedence in the court, it's going to get dropped. And they'll drop the charges and let them walk away thinking, oh, yeah, I've had a result. But the real reason behind it is the legal system can't afford to have a case precedent set on a medical marijuana grow setup. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's either we've got to change the law in Parliament or we've got to change the way the court deals with it.
Again, I'm just throwing that out to the people out there that are looking into it. Is maybe they're the cases that they should be studying to see what paperwork were presented, what arguments were presented. Because we hear all our solid arguments about, okay, Sadama in the room here, he's talking in the Bible, it clearly mentions it. You know, so you can argue the jurisdictions of law, which is the highest law of the book. If it's printed in the book that they write their law from, then how can a statute be above that? Is a valid argument. That sort of thing could get thrown out of court easily, or before charges dropped, before it arrives to court, because it's a valid argument. And that's what you've got to start looking at, these cases that do get the charges dropped when the guy's been blatantly caught red-handed with X amount of plants in his loft.
I think Alan mentioned Colin Davis. Was it Colin Davis in Stockholm?
Colin Davis, yeah.
You see, Colin Davis did end up going to prison, but it wasn't for opening the coffee shop. It was for actually the importation of cannabis. He was charged, and in the cases, Colin Davis versus Stockport Crown Court, it was a precedent of law. He was before the jury, charged with possession, supplying and cultivation on medical grounds. And he won his case. He did win that case, yes.
He did win his case. And also Leslie Gibson won her case before Colin. They did win it on the grounds of medicinal necessity. But this has all changed now. Because
medical necessity. Medical necessity. That changed. The gentleman who actually put forward was Richard Perry. He's a solicitor or a barrister. Excuse me if I got his title wrong. He worked pretty tirelessly and won many cases. I believe 12, was it 12, maybe 14, could be 16 cases. My memory on numbers is a bit iffy.
There was quite a few, yeah.
Yes, he won many. I've spoken to him personally regarding myself and my own case. And I think you will find, well, we do know, because one of the crew who's going through this, who spoke to Richard, and his advice now is defend yourself. It seems to be that people who do defend themselves aren't going to court. it isn't happening. They're not going there.
Well,
Go on, Alan.
If you defend yourself, you can basically say what you want. If you're a barrister, you have to be careful what you say because you don't want to annoy the judge because your career is at stake. This is, I agree completely, defending yourself is the best way, you know. And also I like to say about human rights, because we are the victims, you know. We have the right to conduct a private life. We have the right to believe and practice that belief wherever we want, you know, alone or with others is what the law says. And it's quite specific in human rights that authority can only interfere with you practicing your belief in private when there's certain criteria are met. Just it being against the law isn't enough. The criteria are it must be in the, if they're going to interfere the reason why they can interfere has to be in the public interest of public health, national security, or to protect the rights of other people. Now, if you're growing a few plants at home, like, for instance, Winston Matthews, you might have heard of Winston Matthews. He was growing some plants at home for his own use, you know, because he'd had an accident a long time ago and it helped his back, right? So he ended up with the police going around, they arrested him. He went to court. He said, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to carry on, you know. And he ended up with about 6 court cases and he ended up going to prison, right? They had no right in human rights law. They had no right to go into his house and interfere with his private life, but they got away with it. This is the problem with human rights. You know, when the government's involved and the police are involved, they get away with it, and it's wrong. You know, we need to stand up in court and, you know, maybe even counter-sue the police, because the police are breaking the law. The government is breaking the law, the higher law, by interfering with our private lives. And that's a message that I think we should try to get across. We are the victims, and the taxpayer is paying. We're the victims, and the taxpayer is paying.
Yeah, it truly is a victimless crime. But, you know, we don't like to call ourselves victims, Alan. I know I certainly don't. That they would put us in that scenario. You know, they really would. So yeah, we try to put in a solution to that. And you only remain a victim as long as you allow it. You know, we have got to kind of stop that. We have, man. I mean, especially for people who need medication. You know, this is what it's about. Yeah, frontline soldiers, man, get in the courts. If you find yourself in court, make a stand. You might as well. You know, what's the worst they're going to do nowadays? You know, give you free room and meals. Do you know?
Yeah.
For some people, you know, they're even taxing you for having a spare bedroom. I mean, if the prisons get empty, will we be able to tax? No, anyway. Before I digress down that rabbit hole, and let's stay on the medication side of it for a moment. We've got a lady over in, well, I can't call her a girl, really. I don't like that lady routine. She's one of our crew, you know. She's one of the crew on the Dark City now, Rachel over in Spain. Rachel, do you want to let us know how you're doing at the moment?
Yeah. Hiya, Bob. For those of you that don't know me, I've actually cured my cancer before with the oil, but unfortunately, quite recently, it's come back. I'm also suffering from pleurisy as a complication of it. I'm actually about 6 weeks now into the treatment, and I'm taking between half gram, 3/4 of a gram a day so far, slowly going up towards the gram. But over the last couple of weeks, I've really started to feel a lot better. I'm starting to sleep better. The pain has been a lot less. Even my breathing's getting better, which is brilliant. I actually managed a 30-minute walk yesterday, which was a major breakthrough. So things are looking good. And I went to the doctor who tested my cancer markers, and they've actually started to decline, which is really, really good. So it's all good.
All right, so just let me recap here, Rachel, because, you know, to people who are just hearing this for the first time, you've just dropped a massive bombshell, girl. A massive bombshell. Just let me wind that back a little bit. All right, because for you, it's all there and it's in your life. So let me just chop that into sections. you had cancer.
Yeah.
You took oil, Rick Simpson's oil, done that way. Is that what?
Yeah,
right. Just wanted to clarify, yeah, because it's important information, right? As far as I'm concerned, it is vitally important. So you've been diagnosed with cancer. You've took the oil, the Rick Simpson oil, all right? And it's not Rick's oil, of course. You know, we're calling it that because we want you to know that that's the process that Rachel's used. There's all sorts of different ways of doing it. So, and then you cured that cancer. You had cancer, you took oil, and the cancer went away. Did you take any other treatments at the same time, Rachel?
Well, originally, I started following the conventional route in the hospital. As soon as they told me I'd have to take chemo, I just blankly refused that. I did end up having radiation treatment, which they told me could be preoperative before doing a mastectomy. But unfortunately, that just spread it. And at that point, I left the hospital and haven't turned to conventional medicine at all since then. Went onto the oil, did the course of it, got the all clear, which I had for just over a year.
Right, hang on, you just dropped another bombshell now on me. See how to wind it back? I'm not on my own here, I'm sure I'm not on my own. Right, so let's wind it back again. You got cancer, you went down the conventional medicine, it got worse. Then you took Rick Simpson's oil.
Yeah.
Now, you say it cured it. How do you mean? So you went back to the conventional doctor, and the conventional doctor went, hallelujah, praise the Lord, it's a miracle. Roughly?
Yeah.
Right.
Roughly, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've been down this with something else, you see, where a conventional doctor actually turns around, and at the end of the day, he turns around and calls it a miracle. You know, it's not a mistake. You can't have a mistake. You get sued for a mistake. And it can't be a miraculous cure. Okay, you know, it can't be cannabis, so, hey, we'll have a miracle. That's what we seem to be up against, Rachel. So, brilliant info, right? So, now you say it's returned. Now, a lot of people will be like, well, should you cure it then? Well, hang on a minute. Just before you start beating up on that, you know, before you start focusing down that, let me go down that little rabbit hole. As best as medical science was able to actually determine using their equipment, not ours, a cancer was cured.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, there were no cancer markers in my body.
Let's get that right. So you cured cancer with Rick Simpson's oil. Now, if it were done under more laboratory, you know, conditions, then we'd have cold evidence. But, of course, they're going to say, oh, no, she cured her cancer because she had milk in the morning. The sun comes up in the east, you know, the moon goes round. Hey! So, yeah, that's what did it. There's always going to be that plausible denial about you, Rachel. You know?
Yeah.
You've got to get that because they always do, don't they? You know, straight away. I mean, there's hundreds of cases like yourself. Hundreds, right, at least, you know, that I've come across. Right, so now you're back on it again, yeah, this is come back, right? He's come back. And you've gone to the hospital, and they've gone, oh, hey, it's back.
Sorry, just something to add. I actually did a mistake on the maintenance dose, which might be why it's come back. When I looked on the Phoenix Tears site, it said about doing a maintenance dose of 12 grams of oil per year. Now, I mistook that meaning 12 grams of oil in one go, once a year.
Good night then, eh, Rachel?
No, I don't mean in one night, but over a couple of weeks.
Right, okay. Believe me, there has been a couple of people who've done it all in one go. Yeah. Again, there needs to be more. That information needs to get out there. About that, you're dead right, Ray. So there is a chance that, you know, and fair play to you, you know what I mean, I made a mistake. A lot of people don't want to tell us about that side of it, and that's also vitally important. When it doesn't work, we need to know, as well as when it does work. And mostly, if you're out there and you have done this and you have followed the procedure and it hasn't worked, get in touch with us, please. Get in touch with us here, because it has worked for Rachel. I mean, I suffer from real. Right, we're back on again. It's all happening. It's all happening. Right, Pradsner, if you would, mate, take it away. We are now back on the other stream.
Right.
Just waffle for a minute or two while we give people the opportunity to click back on. No worries, just go on.
I just wanted to point out what Rick said about naphtha and isopropyl alcohol, because there's been a lot of discussion about this, and Rick's position is that naphtha is actually a much more selective solvent than isopropyl alcohol. So it will extract the cannabis oil without taking too much of the chlorophyll and plant matter out of the leaves. If you use isopropyl alcohol, you tend to get a lot more plant matter in it, so you won't get completely pure oil that way. So that's all I wanted to add.
Right, guys, we've got about 7 minutes left before the end of the show. I know we've lost a little bit there. You are all welcome to stay with us on the Dark City and discuss, well, the Dark City shows of your radio. You know, it's all about your radio, giving you the opportunity. So if you do want to call in, and I'm getting a few recent ones just coming up now on my Skype, I have been running around a little bit, just keeping these things working. But it has worked again. We have bumped a couple of times and we've lost it this evening. A few things to iron out. But yeah, the crew gets stronger every day and the servers get a little bit tougher. So yeah, good stuff. I'm really impressed. I'm really impressed, especially with tonight. I didn't know how it was going to go. We have invited a few people to come and speak from other organisations and other groups and stuff. But I want to celebrate in the ones that have come forward. And also invite the ones that haven't yet. Come on, let's try and use this as a platform. Keep your own little things going, definitely. But if you would, come and tell us the successes, come and tell us the failures. I want to know, and this is where I get my news. So yeah, I think we might be on to something. So anybody want to add anything in the last 5 minutes?
I just wanted to go back to what we were talking about before the server went down, and I was saying about how I made a mistake with the maintenance oil. And I spoke to Rick about that, and what I was supposed to have done was taken 1 gram of oil a month as a maintenance dose out of the 12 grams, so that every month you do 1 gram of oil and that just keeps you on a maintenance dose, rather than how I tried to do it, where I tried to take it all at once.
Yeah, again, it's getting it right, isn't it, the treatment? And, you know, when you say it, it makes sense, doesn't it? But, you know, like Stephen had joined us, you know, it's new. We forget that. I'm new, this is to some people. It's different. It is an alternative. And it still is an alternative. I mean, and that's the irony. How someone could be there for so long and be resisted for so long by so few, really. What is the real opposition? Where is the opposition? You know, where is the opposition? You know, let's work with you. Let's find out. Negotiate. You know, be reasonable. That's what we're saying. Jim, I think you may have wanted to get a little bit in there. Am I right?
Yeah, I was just going to try and end it on a bit of a positive note from the Cannabis Club point of view and say, you know, there's quite a few things planned across the country for 4/20, the 4th of April, obviously. That's obviously quite a big day for the smoking community. I mean, there's cannabis clubs dotted literally all over the country now, and they're all doing their own sort of little things, which is worth investigating. And also, there's a trip to Amsterdam going on, which the coach is absolutely full now. It's sold out. But yeah, we're going to Amsterdam to meet up with the likes of sort of Peter Lunk and Noel Van Schlick. They're hosting a sort of big 420 party. So we're hoping to really build some good sort of connections and, yeah, try and build something for the future.
Well, if I can cash me bitcoins in, I might actually join you. I don't like to say, I can't see me doing it at the moment. We're having an awful problems getting things how they're supposed to be. It's one of them, isn't it? But a good thing, man, it is. The summer that many of the listeners would have heard, it was a tune called Don't Worry by Connor Heather. Is it Connor Heather? Is that right? Is that
That's right. Thing? Bang on.
Right. Wow, I got a name right. really cool. He's only a young lad. I think he was like just approaching 20 or something. Amazing. We've put a few of his tunes on. We've done that already and continue to play them on the playlist. We have now got most of what we're playing during the day is all what's been donated or been given us free license or, you know, we're not using commercialised stuff. We've actually also made that little jump. That was written by Connor for Rachel. Don't worry. So that was the track we played before the server crashed. So I hope you got that. But we will put a little clip to it and we'll be playing it again throughout the day. That we don't do the live shows on Dark City. That's what we want to try and do. Right, yeah, positive note, man. You're right. I like to find solutions. Like I say, I like to think what I'm working on consciously all the time is active on them solutions. And I'm quite honoured to be able around such a group of people who are doing that. Alan, you know, been there kicking it around for years. We've got Rick also. You know, it's we've got a lot of knowledge here. There's a lot of knowledge. And we've got to be able to come up with something. I'll stay connected. Yeah, good luck to you all. I don't think you need luck. You mean, you need ganja. That's what we need. You know, no, we can actually solve a hell of a lot with it. And we're just touching on the medical sides here. I mean, let's go down this rabbit hole. Let's take the time. Like I say, to stay focused on what Rick's on about. And that's not going to last forever. We maybe have another month, tops. Maybe less, couple of weeks maybe. Don't know yet. Before Rick starts travelling again. That's what he's doing. He's getting out there. But he wants to get a place where he can start to sort this seed out. Get the seed pushed out there. Doesn't matter where it is really. As far as Rick's concerned, he wants to do that. Let's look at Spain. See if it is feasible. I'll put some time in on the ground. I don't mind doing that. And I know there's others out there as well. I've spoken to a few people. Okay, we haven't got last amounts of cash, we haven't. But get us over this summer, I'm telling you. If it happened this summer, I'll sell a lot. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go live in an old van in Rachel's back garden. That's a joke. That's a joke. Before people do that. So yeah, we've got to do it. I don't want to leave the UK to do it. I really don't. I want to stay here. I want Tim and Alan and Saduma. You know, I want these people here, you know, here in the UK that I've come forth to speak. I want this to happen. I want it to happen here. I really don't think the authorities are going to do that for us.